Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, April 2nd, 2021. Section A, Immigration. Nonprofit Director. Foster Care System, Not Solution for Child Migrants. Official. Space for foster kids is especially limited in the Permian Basin, which has the lowest placement capacity in the state. By Caitlin Randall, CRANDLE@MRT.com. Following some calls to move child migrants from health and human service facilities to foster homes, a Midland nonprofit director said Texas's foster care system isn't better equipped to care for the children. HHS has opened facilities throughout Texas, including Midland County, in response to a surge in unaccompanied minors crossing the border. Some advocacy groups, like the League of United Latin American Citizens, have asked Governor Greg Abbott to apply for additional protections for migrant children and place them in temporary foster homes until they can connect with family members. But with Texas's foster care system already stretched thin, Brandon Logan, executive director of One Accord for Kids, said placing the minors in foster homes could harm two vulnerable groups. They think this is a way that we get kids with families, but I think what they don't understand is we are experiencing a significant capacity issue in Texas foster care. One Accord works with churches, businesses, schools, community members, and other nonprofits to find safe, stable, and permanent homes for foster children. It's not necessarily compassionate for foster kids or migrant children to dump them into this other system that also has kids sleeping in offices, not with foster parents. In February, 186 children slept in Texas Department of Family and Protective Services offices for two nights or more because there weren't homes to place them in. He said space for foster kids is especially limited in the Permian Basin, which has the lowest placement capacity in the state. There were 74 homes in Midland and Ector counties for 161 children in February. Many of those children were transferred out of West Texas to be placed with families. Texas foster care system has more children than homes because it's a difficult system to navigate, and most parents choose to adopt rather than be long-term fosters. Using foster care to house migrant children is being considered in other states. Foster parents in California were asked by state officials last week how many beds they have available to serve unaccompanied minors coming from Central America. Rather than using the foster care system, Logan said federal and state officials should ramp up their response to the immigration crisis by having temporary child care facilities in place before the next surge. I think better care facilities that operate under the same conditions as our licensed facilities in Texas, with oversight and accountability, not man camps, but something that looks like a child-friendly environment, is ultimately the most viable. Vaccinations. The number of vaccinations that Midland Health has administered or moved to other regional entities topped 80,000 on Thursday. Midland Health reported another 1,356 vaccines administered, and the number of vaccines this week reached 4,809, and the total number during the pandemic moved up to 80,960. Midland Health on its website showed 51,177 had been administered at the Horseshoe through Wednesday. It was not clear if all the vaccines reported Thursday took place at the Horseshoe. Midland Health reported Wednesday that walk-ins will be welcome at the Horseshoe complex from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. today. Midland Health suggested those interested in bringing their IDs, parents must accompany minors ages 16 and 17. The Midland Health Department reported Thursday that confirmed COVID-19 cases inside Midland County have surpassed 17,000. The Health Department reported that there have been 17,006 cases through Wednesday. This week, there have been 65 cases reported, one more than the 64 through 4 days to start the week last week. Effective Monday, Midland Health will relocate the COVID-19 rapid testing site from the West Campus to a location adjacent to the Family Medicine Clinic at 3415 North Loop 250 West, Building 4. The COVID-19 testing site will operate by appointment only. To get an appointment, call 68NURSE, 432-686-8773. Those testing resources are available to anyone, regardless of their ability to pay. If available, insurance information will be collected, but no out-of-pocket fees will be required for anyone scheduled. Price of gasoline in Midland falls ahead of Easter weekend, by Stuart Doreen. For the second straight week, the average price of gas in Midland did not rise. In fact, it went down 3 cents this week. The average price in Midland fell to $2.90, which is the second highest price in the state, behind $2.95 in El Paso. Odessa is home to the third highest price, $2.86. The average in Midland is 29 cents ahead of the state average and 3 cents higher than the national average. AAA Texas reported that for the second week in a row, the statewide gas price average decreased. The falling price for a gallon of regular unleaded gasoline is likely due to crude oil prices falling slightly, an increase in regional refinery utilization, along with a rise in regional gasoline supplies. U.S. demand for gasoline did jump week to week, according to the latest data from the Energy Information Administration. Across the region, the following averages were reported: 272 in San Angelo, 265 in Lubbock, and 249 in Amarillo. The lowest average in the state was 244 in the Red River community of Sherman-Denison. Distributors have told the Reporter-Telegram there are many complexities in the fuel business that impact pricing. They pointed to the high cost of transportation from Gulf Coast refineries and Midland's distance from pipelines. The price in Midland was up 93 cents year over year. The state average was up 88 cents. UTB hosts community discussion on sports fields, by J.C. Lewis. The University of Texas Permian Basin hosted city leaders, the Odessa City Council, and leaders of local sports associations for a discussion on the future of sports fields in Odessa. The lease of the sports fields that UTPB has with the City of Odessa ends on August 31st. This provides an opportunity for UTPB and the city to explore ways to balance future arrangements between community sports programs, sports tournaments, and UTPB use for its sports needs. UTPB is working with city leadership to extend the lease agreement for 1 year and transition the responsibility for central operations to the university by December 1st. This will provide a transition year to negotiate and gain approvals for the new long-term agreement and for UTPB to take on the responsibility of central management of the UTPB's fields. If successful, no changes are expected to happen for the fall 2021 season. The facility use agreements between the associations and UTPB will be completed before the spring season of 2022. UT System will determine the appropriate business terms of any new agreement. Why is UTPB considering changes to how the fields are operated and managed now? For the last 25 years, UTPB has been in a lease agreement with the city. The primary lease term expires August 31st. Either party has the option to terminate the lease. However, UTPB will explore ways to balance future arrangements between the community programs, sports tournaments, and UTPB use for its sports needs. UTPB long-term strategic version includes continuing to serve the community by providing access to sports programs. We want to continue to use the approximately 93 acres of university land to provide a terrific experience on our campus in the years ahead for youth and adults. Can we just leave things the way they are? If it worked for the past 25 years, why change it? UTPB believes that organized, centralized professional management will improve the experience of sports participants and further support the work of the sports associations, leagues, the city, and UTPB. The university's active involvement in organizing and supporting youth and adult sporting events on the land is part of our long-term vision. Are you going to allow more large tournaments from out-of-town groups to take over the fields? First, UTPB definitely want people to come to Odessa, stay at our hotels, eat at our restaurants, and experience our culture. This would be a terrific economic boost to the community. UTPB plans to carefully balance tournaments and community and university use appropriately. Sports tourism is an economic development opportunity that would serve several purposes. External tournament revenue will provide an additional funding source, which could help maintain access for local sports participants and association. And external tournaments will increase lodging tax and other tax revenue that will allow the city to recover its past and potentially future investments in the sports infrastructure.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Friday, April 2nd, 2021. Section A. UTPB and City Seek New Sports Agreement by Federico Martinez. University of Texas Permian Basin administrators are seeking a new 25-year agreement with the City of Odessa that would give the university oversight of youth and adult sports leagues that use campus facilities and a percentage of concession and tournament revenues. If an agreement cannot be reached, youth and adult sports teams would no longer be able to use the campus's field facilities, UTPB President Sandra Woodley told Odessa City Council and representatives of the various sports teams in Odessa during a Wednesday meeting held in the Edwards Sports Building Lecture Room. "We're not talking about taking over," Woodley said. "We want to help coordinate schedules, but if we can't get a 25-year agreement, we can't let you use the fields," she said. UTPB officials are proposing that the university coordinate scheduling for all team practices and games played on campus facilities. Currently, there is very little oversight, and each sport tries to coordinate schedules among each other and with university sports teams. That frequently leads to confusion and arguments among teams if they show up at the same time or their practices and games overlap. School officials and representatives for the sports teams agree. Several sports association leaders expressed skepticism about UTPB's motives and worried that the university would try to manage how the teams operate and how many tournaments they play. Tom Martinez, president of the Odessa Soccer Association, said over the years his organization has found a system that works for them. Their biggest problem is the number of players keeps increasing, and the teams need more fields to practice and play. "To be quite frank with you, I don't think we need you," Martinez initially told university leaders during the meeting. Woodley told Martinez that the university believes it can increase the revenue stream for the sports teams, and the money that UTPB collects could be used to build more soccer fields and other facilities. She also reassured Martinez and other sport association representatives that the university is not interested in interfering with their day-to-day operations. Woodley's reassurances appeared to soften Martinez's stance. "All this sounds great," Martinez said later. "We don't want to lose sight of our overall goal of providing opportunities for children." The city and UTPB's current 25-year agreement expires on August 31st, Woodley said. UTPB officials are asking the city council to approve a 1 to 2 year extension to the current contract, which would give both sides time to negotiate a new long-term agreement. Under the current contract, the university has been allowing the city to construct numerous sports fields on a 94-acre site on campus. The city is also responsible for maintaining the facilities. Mayor Javier Hovind said he believes the city and UTPB can work out an agreement. He said the proposed changes could help increase sports revenue and provide even more recreational opportunities for the community. "We're going to be participating in some way," Hovind said. "We've made too big an investment." Councilman Steve Thompson agreed, noting that the city has invested millions of dollars in creating and maintaining the current facilities. Woodley said the sports teams would still operate autonomously from the university. UTPB's involvement would consist of coordinating schedules, conduct annual audits of programs, and provide marketing and promotional assistance. The university is asking that the city give UTPB enough money to hire and pay the salary of additional staff that would coordinate schedules. After 3 years, UTPB would pay the employees' salaries from revenue collected through tournament fees and concessions revenue, Woodley said. City and UTPB officials have not yet discussed how much money the city would have to cough up during those 3 years. Several council members expressed concern that the university might raise participation fees. My priority is recreational activities, Councilwoman Detra White said. I don't want to see these kids being priced out. Woodley said there are no plans to raise fees. UTPB Athletic Director Todd Dooley said the university would use their marketing muscle to help draw more teams and tournaments to Odessa and improve concession operations so that profits will grow. He said the sports teams would continue to receive concession and tournament revenues, but the university would also receive a portion to be negotiated. Under the original agreement, the sports leagues were supposed to pay the university 10% of the revenues they earned from tournaments, Dooley said. The university has never asked for or received those funds. Dooley said the university would forge partnerships with organizations like Discover Odessa to use the sports tournaments to promote tourism. Dooley and Hoven said such partnerships would allow the city to use hotel occupancy tax dollars to improve and expand sports facilities. Dooley and Woodley said the university's marketing team would also pursue sponsorships with local businesses. One idea floated during Wednesday's meeting is finding a local business that would pay to have the campus concession stand named after them. Those are the kinds of sponsorships that the university is in a better position to pursue, Dooley said. The following is information from UTPB. UT Permian Basin Sports Field Frequently Asked Questions. Why is UTPB considering changes to how the fields are operated and managed now? For the last 25 years, UTPB has been in a lease agreement with the city. The primary lease term expires August 31st, 2021. Either party has the option to terminate the lease. However, UTPB will explore ways to balance future arrangements between community sports programs, sports tournaments, and UTPB use for its sports needs. UTPB's long-term strategic vision includes continuing to serve the community by providing access to sports programs. We want to continue to use the approximately 93 acres of university land to provide a terrific experience on our campus in the years ahead for youth and adults. Can we just leave things the way they are? If it worked for the last 25 years, why change it? We believe that organized, centralized professional management will improve the experience for sports participants and further support the work of the associations, leagues, the city, and UTPB. The university's active involvement in organizing and supporting youth and adult sporting events on our land is part of our long-term vision. What does UTPB plan to do? We are working with city leadership to extend for 1 year the lease agreement and transition the responsibility for central operations to the university by December 1st, 2021. This will provide a transition year to negotiate and gain approvals for the new long-term agreement and for the university to take on the responsibility of central coordination of UTPB fields. If successful, no changes are expected to happen for the fall 2021 season, and the MOUs and facility use agreements between the associations and the university will be completed before the spring season of 2022. This period is very important because it will give us time to talk with city leaders, association and league heads, and others, so we can fully appreciate the needs of everyone and work collaboratively to develop a new lease geared toward the future. We want to listen and learn. UT System will undergo a deliberate process to determine the appropriate business terms of any new agreement. The process will include a business and legal review. Any new agreement will be subject to Board of Regents approval. Are you going to allow more large tournaments from out-of-town groups to take over the fields? First, we definitely want people to come to Odessa, stay at our hotels, eat at our restaurants, experience our culture. This would be a terrific economic boost to our community. We plan to carefully balance tournaments and community and university use appropriately. Sports tourism is an economic development opportunity that would serve several purposes. External tournament revenue will provide an additional funding source, which could help maintain access for local sports participants and associations. External tournaments will increase lodging tax and other tax revenue that will allow the city to recover their past and potentially future investments in the sports infrastructure. First responders pay tribute to fallen DPS trooper by Royal McGregor. For 1 minute on Thursday afternoon, first responders gathered at the Ector County Courthouse to honor fallen Texas Department of Public Safety trooper Chad Walker. The first responders from the area included Odessa Police Department, Ector County Sheriff's Office, Texas Department of Public Safety, Ector County ISD Police, and Odessa Fire Rescue. Governor Greg Abbott issued a press release Wednesday night to ask Texas law enforcement officers to turn on their red and blue flashing lights for 1 minute at 1 p.m. Thursday to honor Trooper Walker. There were more than 50 first responder vehicles that wrapped around the Ector County Courthouse with their red and blue flashing lights Thursday afternoon. Regardless if they wear blue, brown, tan, or gray, law enforcement is still a family, Odessa Police Department Chief Michael Gerke said. We feel for that loss in our family. Our thoughts and prayers go out to his immediate family. Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths told the Odessa American that it's important to honor those peace officers who have been killed in the line of duty. Each and every traffic stop could potentially be our last one, Griffiths said. All my guys know that. All OPD officers know that. According to the Officer Down Memorial page, Walker was traveling on FM 2838 near US 84 when he observed the vehicle parked on the shoulder at about 7:45 p.m. March 26th. As Walker pulled behind the vehicle, the driver exited and opened fire with a handgun, shooting through the windshield of the patrol car before it had come to a full stop. Trooper Walker was struck in the head and abdomen. He was transported to a local hospital where it was determined he could not survive the gunshots, the website stated. He was kept on life support until March 31st, when his organs were donated. Gerke said he knows the heartache DPS is going through as three OPD corporals were reportedly shot and killed by Larry Neal White. Corporals Arlie Jones and John Scott Gardner died September 8, 2007, while Corporal Abel Marquez died September 12, 2007, after he was airlifted to University Medical Center in Lubbock. Law enforcement agencies from across the country came to Odessa to provide support for local law enforcement, so they were able to attend the funerals of the three slain officers. When that happened, we had outpouring from across the country, Gerke said, to kind of pay that back, to show those departments that we appreciate what they did, but also we are here to support them. The only SCSO deputy to be killed in the line of duty was Deputy Sheriff Thad DeWitt West, who was killed February 27, 1958. West was shot and killed while he was reportedly investigating reports of a couple attempting to sell a 4-month-old baby. Griffiths told the Odessa American that his everyday fear is one of his deputies getting hurt or killed in the line of duty. "Every time that one of our deputies have been shot, I get a big lump in my throat," Griffiths said. "Glory be to God that all my deputies have survived." ECISD to Stay on Top of Federal Funding by Ruth Campbell. Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Murray again addressed the need for federal CARES money to flow directly to school districts so they can fight the learning loss caused by the pandemic. "Those funds would help us do a variety of things to address the unfinished learning of our students created because of the pandemic. Specifically, we're planning on extending the school year for our elementary children, not only this summer, but next summer and the following summer as well," Murray said during his media call Wednesday. Extending the school year, however, costs money. "The federal stimulus money would help us cover the costs of extended learning throughout the summer. We need those dollars, again, to help cover what the state of Texas doesn't cover in their efforts," Murray said. "Tutoring, we recognize, is one of the most effective ways to increase student learning in a situation like this. Tutoring comes at a price of between $25 and $40 an hour, sometimes times the number of hours that would be required, times the number of students who can receive that, times 3 years," Murray added. He said educators think it will take at least 3 years for districts to address the learning loss, so that amount of tutoring has a pretty significant price tag. "We recognize that learning gaps have widened significantly since the pandemic, and our teachers are going to be challenged to meet those individual learning needs," Murray said. "That's going to require some more professional development for our teachers. They're going to need some more tools, curricular resources, etc., to make sure that we're able to address those individual learning needs of our kids. We have some healthy plans in place. We have ideas. We know how we would invest that money. We simply need members of the House and the Senate to make sure that every dime of that federal stimulus money makes its way to Ector County," Murray added. "Our board has passed a resolution encouraging members of the State House and Senate ensure that that money flows to our school district. We'll stay on top of this." He added that he encourages everyone to contact their state legislators on this issue. He noted that today, Good Friday, is a holiday for everyone and the district will be closed. Switching to summer school, Murray said he wants it to be a new and engaging experience for students from elementary to high school. "We want our kids, specifically our elementary children, to be involved this summer, to enjoy each and every day that they participate in this experience," he said. Asked for a hint, Murray said the district has invested in lots of robotic opportunities. "There will be some pretty interesting experiences for kids at every grade level this summer, specifically in the area of robotics and engineering. Kids will have some really unique opportunities to use their hands, their brains, to explore some interesting robotics equipment and tools. Our teachers are pretty excited about those, as is our curriculum staff. I know the kids will be as well," Murray said. An ECISD live broadcast is available on this topic on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and the ECISD website. "We recognize that the pandemic has created significant learning gaps for many of our students, and this summer provides a great opportunity for us, along with our families, to begin to close some of those gaps that have been created. We've put together a great summer experience." Quick hits. Spring plant sale. The Permian Basin Master Gardeners has scheduled a spring plant sale from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. April 10th at the Ector County Coliseum, Building A, 4201 Andrews Highway. There will be drought-tolerant plants, perennials, grasses, shrubs, and annuals. Availability of plants may be limited. visit westtexasgardening.org or facebook.com/westtexasgardening. Gun and Blade Show. Silver Spur Gun and Blade Show has been scheduled from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. April 10th and from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. April 11th at the Midland Horseshoe Pavilion, 2514 Arena Trail, Midland. Admission is $7 for adults, free for ages 12 and younger, or $12 for a two-day pass. Cash only. Visit silverspurtradeshows.com/shows. Volunteers needed. Volunteers are needed for the Keep Odessa Beautiful program, We Care, We Help. The program helps provide lawn care for those in the community who are disabled, elderly, veterans, or widowed. The program is volunteer-based with dates and times of service provided with ability of the volunteers. Those who are interested in registering can go to tinyurl.com/4WX4F5NB. Midland Festival Ballet presents offline and on stage. The Midland Festival Ballet is returning to action with its mixed repertoire production called Offline and Onstage. The performance will take place at 7:30 p.m. April 17th at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center, accompanied by the Midland Odessa Symphony and Chorale. The performance will feature new works by Alice Keegi Brinkman and local choreographers Maisha Morris and Pearl Wamsley. Music by Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, Antonio Vivaldi, and Queen will set the mood for the night of choreography that will span multiple genres. It'll feature a wide variety of choreography, Executive Director Rachel Kerr Ritter said. Two of them will be by local choreographers. During the pandemic, it's been very difficult for us to bring in choreographers to be here to help us do a lot of the things that we do just because of the safety. The works that will be featured will include variations on a theme of Argyle, which will be choreographed by Rob Davidson, featuring fast footwork and traditional music by Mozart. The second will be Still You, which is choreographed by Morris, while Baroque Lucidity will be choreographed by Brinkman, that will bring the melodies of Vivaldi to life in a celebration of the three movements of summer from his Four Seasons composition. The fourth piece will be Keep Yourself Alive by Wamsley. We've been really working with the talent that we have locally to give our dancers opportunities not only to perform, because that hasn't been possible as usual, but also to have that experience of learning new work and creating new pieces, Ritter said. Tickets are available at www.wagnerknoll.com. ECISD to host 8 graduation ceremonies. Ector County ISD has announced the class of 2021 graduation dates, times, and locations. These will follow the traditional pattern of graduation ceremonies. Class of 2021, Odessa Collegiate Academy, May 21st, 6 p.m. at Odessa College Sports Center. OC Techs, May 21st, 8 p.m. at Odessa College Sports Center. George H.W. Bush New Tech Odessa, May 27th, 7 p.m. at Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Odessa High School, May 28th, 8:30 p.m. at Ratliff Stadium. Permian High School, May 29th, 8:30 p.m. at Ratliff Stadium. Additionally, ECISD announced plans for the class of 2020 traditional graduation ceremonies. Class of 2020, OCA OC Techs New Tech Odessa, May 21st at 10 a.m. at Odessa College Sports Center. Odessa High School, May 22nd, 9:30 a.m. at Ratliff Stadium. Permian High School, May 22nd, 8:30 p.m. at Ratliff Stadium. All graduation ceremonies for both classes will have COVID-19 safety protocols in place with limited capacity and a ticket process. All ceremonies will be streamed live in order to be available to wider audiences. Additional information and updates will be posted on the ECISD homepage as it becomes available. Each high school will also be contacting families from both the class of 2021 and the class of 2020. For more information about this release, contact ECISD Communications at 432-456-9019. On the net, HectorCountyISD.org. Local News Roundup. Art Exhibit. Sol Ross State University has scheduled an art exhibit from Anthony Carrasco through April 9th at the Francois Art Gallery in Alpine. Through the medium of ceramics, Carrasco explores his personal connection to the austere environment in which he was raised. He was raised in Presidio in the Chihuahuan Desert for 23 years. Walking is his form of travel. By walking in his hometown and its surroundings over the years, he has developed a personal connection to the land and has witnessed the changes in the desert through time. With Textures of Time, Carrasco shares his love for the Chihuahuan Desert with ceramic forms and dirt tiles. Gallery hours are from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. For more information, call 432-837-8258 or visit solross.edu. Mural Assistance Program. Local business owners wanting to spruce up their buildings will get some help from Odessa Arts. Beginning June 1st, business can apply for mural assistance. This $2,500 matching grant will assist businesses with finding the right artist and purchasing supplies to enhance their buildings with murals. Grants will be distributed across all city council districts as well as inside the downtown Odessa footprint. Grant application portal will open June 1st. Visit odessaarts.org. IDEA Holds Groundbreaking by Ruth Campbell. After more than a year of effort, a groundbreaking for IDEA Yukon was held Thursday. The campus is located at 7300 East Yukon in Parks Bell Ranch. It's not done, but the building is already taking shape, and the campus is set to open August 4th, said Bethany Solis, Executive Director of IDEA Permian Basin. The contractor for the school is Lee Lewis, and the architect is Corgan. It will enclose 77,784 square feet, and the cost is $19 million. Initially, the campus will have kindergarten through second grade and sixth grade. Eventually, it will scale up to include kindergarten through 12th grade. In 2019, it was announced that a group of Permian Basin companies, foundations, and individuals from Ector and Midland counties contributed nearly $55 million in startup funds for IDEA Public Schools to establish a presence in the region. The Scarborough Foundation donated $21 million, Abel Hanger Foundation $5.5 million, and the Henry Foundation $2 million. Odessa businessman Colin Sewell led efforts to raise up to $10 million from individuals and organizations in Odessa, a previous OA article said. ECISD and IDEA Public Schools recently completed the contract negotiations allowing IDEA Public Schools to partner with ECISD as an innovation partner to serve kindergarten through second and sixth grades in ECISD beginning with the 2021-22 school year. Students enrolled at the IDEA location will be ECISD students. Students at current F campuses will be prioritized for the IDEA lottery selection next year. And ECISD will provide transportation, something IDEA would not be able to do on its own, the board recap said. We would absolutely not be here without the support of so many people here today and many others not present, Solis told audience members. I think one of the things that has set apart IDEA's work in the Permian Basin is that it's been an all-hands-on-deck, cross-community effort from the efforts of the Scarborough Foundation, the Henry Foundation, the Abel Hanger Foundation, to the tremendous support of the Wood Foundation here in Odessa, and PSP, the Permian Strategic Partnership, across the region. We and many others who have supported in word and action, in relationships, in generous giving. We would not be here without the help of so many of you. Sewell, president of the Sewell family of companies and a member of the National Board of Directors for IDEA, spoke next. He said, IDEA creates opportunities that might not be there otherwise. He added that there have been limited times when Odessa and Midland have cooperated, and this is one of them. Had it not been for the collaboration between philanthropists and organizations throughout the Permian Basin, IDEA Public Schools would not be here today, Sewell said. Today, ladies and gentlemen, is proof of what happens when we all work together. Renee Earls, president and CEO of the Odessa Chamber of Commerce, said many in the audience may not have been out to Parks Bell to see the growth. It's not long ago that all of this ranch land was pasture, mesquite trees, and tumbleweeds, Earls said. But over the last 5 or 10 years, we've seen homes, we've seen apartments, we're seeing retail, unbelievable growth, a great example of how Odessa is prospering and thriving and growing. None of that can happen without education. Earls said her parents saved every dime to send her and her sister to college and graduate debt-free. I know what education can do for you, and it pains me to think that only 6% of our children here in Ector County ISD get to do that. So as I was reading on the website for IDEA this morning, I knew about their 100% acceptance rate for their students to college, which is amazing and almost just unbelievable. But I was looking at what they call their core values. They have 6 of them. No excuses, whatever it takes, 100% every day, sweating the small stuff, team and family, and closing the achievement gap. Those are core values that we should all have. Those are life lessons, Earls added. She added that the education students receive in the building behind her is their gateway to success and prosperity. These will be our future leaders. These will be the people sitting in these chairs in front of us at future groundbreakings. I am so happy that they partnered with ECISD to provide this as one of their charter schools. Solis said what she thought was powerful about Thursday, for one, is that it's the first IDEA campus to be built in the Permian Basin. And as you heard earlier, this has been such a collaborative effort across so many of our communities. So to see it actually come together and have a building going up as a result is very rewarding and very exciting. And second, the fact that our partnership with ECISD is pending state approval, it's locked in. I think it's very exciting for the children of Odessa because it means that with ECISD help, more children across the city will have access through transportation, through lottery preference, to come to a great school, even if they don't live around the corner from it. Robin Berkla, Regional Director of Operations, said Solis voiced her feelings. Berkla added that seeing Odessa and Midland come together was extra meaningful for her because she's from here. We're going to make a true community transformation, and I'm just so thankful to be a part of it. I can't wait to see years from now where we stand as a whole and with both communities working together, Berkla said. Odessa Arts to celebrate Arts Appreciation Month. Arts and the City of Odessa will be celebrating Arts Appreciation Month throughout April. With Texas opening back up, our arts organizations are eager to welcome our patrons back, Odessa Arts Executive Director Randy Hamm said in a news release. This is a great opportunity to reacquaint our community with the fantastic cultural offerings we have in Odessa. April will kick off with a sneak peek at the Ector Theater for media at 10:30 a.m. April 7th. Media representatives will be able to tour the theater and hear from Executive Director Reese Eoff. Odessa Arts will also be in attendance to announce dates and performers for Hot Summer Nights. Odessa Arts will also resume quarterly art after hours at 5:30 p.m. April 12th at Proteus Salon to highlight the work of photographer Richard Acosta and hear from arts consultant Aaron Tooley on the progress of Odessa's cultural plan. In addition, many other cultural entities have scheduled programming for April. A complete calendar of events can be found at odessaartsmonth.com. We are also asking the public to weigh in on the direction of Odessa's cultural community by completing a survey, said Hamm. Community members can visit odessaculturalplan.com and answer a few questions to help us as we work on our cultural programming and spaces for the next 20 years. It's a great time for those who want to be better involved in the arts to make their voices heard. Arts Appreciation Month will wrap up at City Council April 27th with a reception prior to council meeting. Latinos are driving population boom in Odessa. By Federico Martinez. Ector County appears to be among the top 10 fastest-growing counties in Texas during the past decade, a population surge primarily due to an increase in Hispanic residents, Lloyd Potter, director of the Texas Demographic Center, told the Texas House of Representatives Committee on Redistricting on Thursday. Although official 2020 census figures won't be ready until late September, studies conducted by his office since 2016 indicate that Hispanics have accounted for more than half of the estimated 4 million population increase that Texas is expected to see since 2010, Potter said. Texas is expected to gain 3 additional congressional seats, Potter told the redistricting committee. Hispanics will continue to drive the population growth in Texas. The Texas Redistricting Committee held a 2-hour hearing Thursday to discuss population projections and the redistricting process for West Texas. State Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican Odessa, who sits on the committee, said it's important to start looking at how census figures and redistricting could affect the Permian Basin. We are still waiting on the final data from the U.S. Census Bureau, but there is no time to waste. We need to get to work, Landgraf said. We need to hear from West Texans to be sure our voices continue to be heard in Austin and Washington in the decade ahead. Potter noted that 154 out of 254 West Texas counties appear to have lost residents during the past decade, but Odessa and Midland have grown substantially, although he did not provide estimated data during the hearing. Landgraf credited Odessa and Midland's population boom on the area's oil and gas industry and agriculture. West Texas has carried its own weight in terms of contributing to the state's economy, Landgraf said. Every decade, the House Redistricting Committee and Senate Redistricting Committee use census data to draft new district maps, which can determine how many representatives a geographical area has. Obituary for Friday, April 2nd. Alice Abrams Calm. Alice Calm, 81, of Odessa, passed away Sunday, March 28th. She was born August 23rd, 1939, in Queens, New York. She married Lawrence Larry Peter Joseph Calm in Connecticut in 1958. Surviving her are her son Larry Calm Jr., daughter Allison Calm, sisters Doris Chiloon, Sarah Newton, and Barbara, as well as three grandchildren. She was preceded in death by her husband, Larry, her parents, and two brothers. Services will be held from 5 to 9 p.m. Saturday, April 3rd, at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Condolences to the family may be sent online at acreswestfuneral.com. Death Notice. James Robert Jackson. James Robert Jackson, 91, of Midland, died Monday, March 22nd. A graveside service will be held at 11 a.m. April 3rd at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are by American Heritage Funeral Home of Midland.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, March 31st, 2020. This is the oil page. This article is entitled, OPEC Plus Heads for Output Talks with Cautious Stance Vindicated, by Grant Smith, Bloomberg. As OPEC and its allies prepare for another decision on oil output, the producers believe their defiantly cautious approach is paying off. The coalition, led by Saudi Arabia, was widely criticized 3 weeks ago when it rebuffed calls to revive some of the crude production halted during the pandemic. Energy Minister Prince Abdulaziz bin Salman made clear that he wasn't going to put his faith in predictions of a post-COVID rebound, saying he would only believe in the demand recovery when I see it. Since then, fuel demand in the U.S. has shown strong signs of recovery. But a resurgence of the virus elsewhere has convinced the cartel it made the right call, according to several OPEC Plus delegates who asked to speak anonymously. They predict the group will again refrain from significantly opening the taps when it meets on April 1st. Prince Abdulaziz remains ever concerned. He's unwilling to say that COVID is in the rearview mirror, said Halima Croft, chief commodities strategist at RBC Capital Markets. More likely than not, we're looking at a Saudi rollover of their production cut. The Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and its partners will consider on Thursday whether to revive part of the 8 million barrels of daily output, about 8% of global supply, it's withholding while fuel demand remains depressed. The cartel's intervention has helped to boost crude prices more than 20% this year, even as the economic ravages of the pandemic continued. It has shored up revenues for both its members and a beleaguered global oil industry. OPEC is going to defend the price, Torbjörn Tornquist, chief executive officer of trading giant Gunvor Group Limited, said in an interview. The group would really like to see Brent crude hold near current levels of about $65 a barrel. 3 weeks ago, it was under fire. The group's surprise decision not to boost production, which was led by Prince Abdulaziz, was seen as an attempt to push up prices that could backfire by hurting demand and encouraging OPEC's rivals to invest in new supplies. In the days after the March 4th meeting, Brent soared to $70 a barrel, prompting key consumer India to protest at the financial pain. Yet the rally soon dissolved. Europe reimposed lockdowns to continue to contain a virulent strain of the coronavirus, while India and Brazil contended with worsening outbreaks. Crude purchases in Asia slowed as a lackluster tourist season failed to stimulate fuel demand. Meanwhile, oil supplies swelled as Iran ramped up exports to China in defiance of U.S. sanctions. Within a week of hitting a one-year high, oil futures surrendered almost $10. Whatever Riyadh's actual motivation had been, its strategy now looked less like a ploy to push prices higher than a prudent insurance policy against their collapse. The demand growth has been much slower to come back,
largely because of the reemergence of the virus in Europe, said Gunvor's Tornqvist. The U.S. looks actually pretty good, but stocks are not coming down as fast as we thought. OPEC Plus will discuss whether to revive part of the 1.2 million barrels a day of output it's committing to returning to the market in installments this year. At the same time, the Saudis will review the status of an additional 1 million barrel a day cut they have been making since February to accelerate the process of clearing the lingering oil glut. The kingdom has also pledged to restore the supply gradually, but gave no firm dates for doing so. Saudi Arabia also hasn't yet finalized its position on whether to extend the current cuts, according to a delegate who asked not to be named. With oil prices significantly below the levels many OPEC nations need to cover government spending, delegates say the coalition is expected to tread carefully again on Thursday. Favored nations. OPEC Secretary General Mohamed Barkindo told a committee of the coalition's technical experts on Tuesday that the producers must remain very cautious. Positive developments seen in the market last month were countered by the ongoing fragility caused by the pandemic, he said. If any barrels are added at this week's meeting, they'll most likely come from Russia and Kazakhstan. At the past few gatherings, the two countries have been given special dispensation to make a head start on restoring supplies, amounting to about 300,000 barrels a day between them. Russia's government doesn't face the same fiscal need for high prices as the Saudis, so giving it the leeway to pump a little bit more while other nations maintain their restraint is seen as the price Riyadh must pay to ensure Moscow's continuing cooperation, said Bjarne Schieldrop, chief commodities analyst at SEBAB. The group in total is probably fine with that, said Schieldrop. The rest of OPEC Plus will hold production steady in May, given current physical oil market weaknesses. An increase from the wider 23-nation coalition is more likely later in the year. Oil demand is on the mend in the U.S., the biggest consumer, and already above pre-virus levels in China, the next largest. Draining stockpiles. OPEC expects the global oil stockpile surplus that built up during the pandemic to be mostly gone in the next 3 months, according to data presented at Tuesday's meeting of the Joint Technical Committee. Long-term price gauges in futures contracts signal that inventories will tighten sharply in the second half of the year. China is recovering very, very strongly, and other economies along with it, said Jan Stewart, global energy economist at Cornerstone Macro LLC in New York. At some point, possibly, the Saudis decide it's important not to alienate the guys they depend on for growth. Riyadh and its partners could also face a little more urgency to restore idle production if legislation introduced in the U.S. Senate last week penalize OPEC for price fixing becomes law.
This article is entitled "Robots May Replace 20% of Oilfield Jobs in a Decade," report says, by David Weth, Bloomberg. The U.S. oil industry could save more than $7 billion in wages by replacing human roughnecks with robots on rigs, according to a report from Rystad Energy. At least 2 out of every 10 oil workers globally in drilling, operational support, and maintenance could be replaced by automation in the field over the next decade, the energy data provider said Monday in a report. That would translate into more than 100,000 total jobs replaced in the U.S., for example. Even when the COVID-19 downturn is finally past us, operators will have to continue exploring new avenues for cost reductions, Sumit Yadav, an analyst at Rystad, wrote Monday in the report. There are, however, hurdles to overcome, including regulatory approvals as well as resistance from labor organizations, Rystad said. Headcount reductions in the U.S. from robots would be a further blow to an industry that has struggled to return to pre-pandemic levels. Rig use, both in the shale patch and in the U.S. Gulf of Mexico, is still down by almost half compared to the start of last year.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.